Welcome to, what are we, is this the apocalypse now? Did everybody
leave? Are we still
here? Is anybody there? Anyway, this is the first post-rapture Curmudgeon's Corner on Sunday, May 22nd, 2011. I'm Sam Minter. I've got Yvonne Bo with me. I feel so left out because I'm still here.
No flying up here.
In the sky. Nothing happened.
No massive earthquake destroyed the planet.
It was supposed to be like earthquakes going around the time zones as the people being raptured left. And then we were supposed to have a number of months of, like, you know, disaster and war and everything else for those of us that didn't go. And then the world was actually supposed to end in October, was it?
I also understood that the universe was also supposed to end as well.
Yeah.
And I saw these people that sold all their possessions. I mean, what the fuck? Okay, so let me ask you a question. So you're one of these clowns, right? Hey, so now what?
As you could see, the apocalypse and the rapture was sort of interfering a little bit with the beginning of our show. So we, you know, did all the appropriate, like, prayers and things to the all the appropriate authorities, and we started over. So here you go. Welcome to the first post-rapture Curmudgeon's Corner. I am unfortunately still here. This is Sam Minter.
So am I.
And Yvonne is here too. It is Sunday, May 22nd. We were all supposed to leave yesterday, and I'm so broken up about it. Like,
well, I'll take it that I was supposed to be, you know, destroyed and engulfed or something, you know, since I probably wasn't worthy or something. I'm sure that, you know, that was part of the whole thing. And,
I probably, you know, given my whole attitude towards, you know, things, I probably wasn't going to fly up into the sky. But
no,
I'm still disappointed. You know, and part of my disappointment is actually that all those other people didn't fly up into the sky.
That would have been lovely if we could have gotten rid of a lot of them. I mean, that would have been, you know, I'm like, oh, God, what a relief. They're gone. Thank you. I'm like, you know, I don't have to listen to this shit anymore. You know, on Friday, you know, us being very concerned at the office about the end of the world, decided to head to South. Yeah, of course, we went to South Beach, and of course, we went to South Beach, obviously, you know, to go drink. Okay, you know, so I'm like, I hadn't been to South Beach in a while to go drink, so we went down there to probably one of the most decadent places to, you know, go drink and, like, hang out and be, you know. I am married, so I was avoiding getting hit on by women, but my buddy that was there was being attacked, okay, by the hordes of good-looking women who apparently had no concern whatsoever about the world ending tomorrow, or we were just downing the last few glasses of scotch or vodka before.
I think that's probably it. I mean, like, given that the world was about to end, you really wanted to, like, you know, live it up.
Out in style. I mean, what the hell? I'm like, you know, standing, you know, on the ocean, you know, looking at a gorgeous sunset, you know, standing across from what actually, you know, sort of the things is that down there, there is this island off of Miami Beach called Fisher Island. That zip code is reputed to be the most expensive zip code in the United States by square foot, okay? Mm-hmm. So I'm standing at where, you know, the junction of the ocean, you know, beautiful women, like, gorgeous real estate, a gorgeous sunset, and I'm like, you know, drinking, you know, $15 a glass scotch, and I'm like, well, you know, if I'm going to go down, might as well be like this. You know, but didn't go down.
Well, you know, maybe the number of people who were pure enough was just very, very small. And so we haven't noticed yet.
Yes.
You know.
We haven't noticed that any of them are on. Right. Okay. I mean, that could be, because here's the thing. Nobody has seen or heard from Harold Camping
ever since
this thing happened.
Maybe he's
gone. A whole bunch of people went down to his compound, and I'm not sure, you know, one of the things that I found a little bit amusing is that, you know, his compound had, like, razor wire around it and barred windows, and I'm like, you know, if he was going to go to heaven, why would he feel the need to protect his compound with razor wire?
Good question. And I don't know. And why did he have a compound?
Why did he have a compound in the first place?
You know, because, you know, given that, you know, this was going on, he probably, you know, he should have been spending his last moments roaming the streets trying to convert people and save them.
Yeah, and I will quote one guy over here who said, somebody talking about the guy, he made a nice quote, predicting the end of the world is a bit like alcoholism. Once you get started, it's hard to stop. So I guess that this guy is just...
And of course, you know, the prediction was originally 1994, but apparently, you know,
right.
he made a math error. I guess the addition thing or subtraction, or I don't know what
right.
it was.
Yeah.
But like, it really was 2011. So
right.
I guess he's,
right.
you know, maybe, you know, assuming this didn't happen, and maybe it did happen, and we just... We're all horrible people,
here.
So we're
so,
still
I
here.
I don't know if you remember that there... That Intel was selling these chips that had a built-in math error.
That's what it was. Okay. He was using one of those.
It was around that time. Using one of those.
You know, that must be it. And
okay.
But I guess, you know, either they're all gone and there just weren't very many of them, or
right.
maybe he has to go back and check his calculations again.
I think I'll send him a, you know, I think I'm going to mail him a nice little HP 12C, which is like quite reliable. And just say,
nice
dude,
calculator.
Here, look, what, just here, dude, why don't you try to redo your math, buddy? Oh, man. So we're all still here.
Yeah.
Yes,
well, you know, the shame of it, really, I mean, there are a few people who just went absolutely nuts on this, you know, selling all their stuff, yeah.
I'm sure quit their jobs.
Quit, yeah, exactly. Huddled down in their house with their families waiting to go. I read at least one article with, like, a family where the parents were absolutely convinced this was going to happen, but the kids, who were teenagers,
They're like, you're idiots.
We're basically...
I gotta admire their kids.
We're basically like, you're idiots. We try not to let our friends see our parents. You know, we... but meanwhile, the parents are like, oh my God, my kids are going to hell. What, we're gonna pray for them? We're gonna, you know...
And then I saw that they were saying, like, their parents are still demanding them to like, make up their room or clean it up. And they're like, why, Mom? The world's ending on Saturday. Who cares?
Well, my favorite part of this is, and this has been going on for a number of years, but it got a lot of additional publicity this week, of course, was this company who provides a service where for, I believe the fee is like $150, $200 or whatever, they will guarantee that a certified atheist who, just to be sure, has blasphemed in a way specified in the Bible... We'll take care of your pets after you're raptured.
Wow! Damn! Hey, can we get paid up front?
Oh, yeah, it was all pay up front.
Oh, shit, I love that deal! Damn, we should have... Man, I... Oh, gosh, I would have been up for that.
You know, so and that was the whole deal. And, you know, they, because of increasing demand, they apparently raised their prices from, you know, over the last week or so. It had been like $100. And,
yeah. Oh, gosh, I gotta love this. Oh, well, you know, well, the world didn't end. And, you know, I'm not saying that the world, I mean, our planet couldn't end. Let's face it. I mean, we could get hit by a massive meteor. I mean,
there are all kinds of things that could happen.
I mean, there go all kinds of things that could cause, you know, the destruction of the planet. But the one that Harold Camping was advocating?
I'm not sure it was quite advocating. Like, but yes.
Or saying.
Yes.
Just not likely. Let's just put it to you that way. Okay?
I don't know. Just watch. So, you know, he was probably off by a day, and it's going to happen this afternoon.
Oh, well, okay. So that may be it. Another math there. Well, you know, yeah. Well, you know, his computer, it's old. Okay, all right. I gotcha. Okay, all right. Well, okay, so.
I don't know if there's much else to say about the rapture, but, the last couple weeks,
people have just been
making lots of fun of this, you know, and I just feel sorry for the people out there who actually believe this crap, you know.
So do I. I mean, you know, it's just so stupid. So anyway,
yes, there's the like decent form of religion that's basically all about, you know, be nice to your neighbors and, you know, live a good ethical life, and, you know, all the rest is just sort of sat dressing. And then there's like people like this who, you know, let this stuff take it in such weird directions and let it dominate and ruin their lives and the lives of others, and it's just sad. Anyway,
I think, you know, my whole thing is that I see a whole bunch of these people that I'm like, you know, how do I put this? They go and they say, well, in order for you to be, you know, it's like the only reason they seem to want to be good is because they're in fear of some god that will punish them if they're not.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, can't you just be good because or do the right thing because, you know, maybe it's that what your neighbors would appreciate. Maybe that's what that, you know, because maybe that's what would make us live in a happier planet. Maybe just because that's, you know, what would make, you know, like, I don't know.
On the other hand,
isn't it just nice to be able to make somebody else feel better?
I agree with you completely, but on the other hand, I have to think if these people would just be total dicks if they weren't afraid of eternal hell, then let them fucking believe in eternal hell and at least be decent some of the time. I don't know. I think that's all we can say about that.
Yeah. All right. Okay. All right, then.
Yes. So, we do have a few other topics today. We had one more fluffy.
Absolutely.
We had one more fluffy topic we were going to talk about. I've just been noticing a lot of tattoos lately and wanted to chat with Yvonne a little bit about that.
I think you haven't been out enough is what I think.
Well, you know, look. Here's the thing. I mean, I've always seen tattoos. There have always been tattoos around, and I've always, you know, I've known people with tattoos in various places and things. But what I've seen more of lately, and maybe, you know, maybe it is just where I go and where I travel, and this might be a lot more prominent in your part of the country. But what I've been seeing a lot more lately is the people with the, like, you know, entire parts of their body 100% covered. Like with these giant panoramas, like that, you know, here's your entire arm covered, or, you know, I've seen a bunch of women with their whole, like, every visible part of their chest is covered, you know, and I know there have always been people who have done this, but it's always seemed like in the past to me to be, you know, a fairly, esoteric small group who was really into this stuff, but I'm seeing it more and more and more. Like, you know, I go to the coffee shop, you know, to get a snack in the morning at work, and like half the people there are covered in stuff like this, you know.
There's been a surge in that since the mid 90s. I think maybe it's just where you've been and you haven't been paying attention. But the surge I saw, I mean, I'll tell you, for example, when I used to be in high school, for example, okay, and even going to in high school, I knew no girl that had a tattoo. I mean, none that, you know, went to high school with me, whatever. Went into college, and still, even like having a girl with that tattoo, that was like the super rare thing. Then somewhere in the mid 90s, this started to become popular. Okay, I mean, I knew girls that I would have never thought would have a tattoo, got a tattoo. I mean, my wife actually has one. Okay, you know, mm-hmm. Let's put it to you that way. Well, you know, and it started to become really popular.
And like, you know,
in the mid 90s,
and I've noticed for a while increasing popularity of things like, you know, the little pattern around your wrist or your ankle or the little thing here or there. And you know, frankly, yeah, I'm very conservative on this basis. I don't like tattoos at all. I think they're kind of gross, even small little ones. But I've sort of the small little ones I've definitely seen increasing over the last 10, 20 years. But it's just in the last couple years where I've really been seeing these, like, massive, like, cover everything kind of tattoos. I mean, commonly.
Yeah,
I always saw them every once in a long while, but it used to be like you saw one and you're like, oh my God, what's that? Now I'm, like, seeing them almost every day.
I know. It's just a big surge that's just made it over the last number of years. I mean, it's just been that way, I guess, you know? I don't know. I mean, I certainly ain't getting a tattoo anytime soon, that's for damn sure.
Yeah, you're not going to see me with one. Yeah, no. I look at these things and I'm like, what the fuck were these people thinking? You know? I mean, and some of them are like, you know, nice and artsy and like, oh, that's kind of an interesting design. But I'm like, I don't care what the design is. You know, you're choosing to have something that's permanent for the rest of your life. Someday these people are going to be like, you know, 90-year-old ladies with this thing on them. And like, I don't know. I mean, and both men and women, by the way. I don't want to pick on the women here. I mean, I've been seeing this much more commonly with men as well. Just it's just like, really? I'm sorry. I don't know. I'm being a old-fashioned get-off-your-lawn curmudgeon again. This kind of stuff, just like, I look at it and I'm like, oh my God, really? Really?
Well, anyway. Yeah, I know. That's your deal. I know. I've been cured. My wife has one. What the hell? What am I gonna do?
Does your wife have one of the big ones?
No, she has a relatively small one.
Yeah, I could imagine adapting and you know, dealing with. Oh, okay. They have like a little star on their wrist, or yeah.
That's actually what she has. She has it like somewhere like around like, I don't know, somewhere. What the heck is it? It's like near the bottom of her belly, like around there somewhere, like around her waist somewhere. Okay.
And you know, I know my sister has one. You know.
Oh, your sister has one.
My sister has one. I was like, oh, really? But yes, she has one. The ones that aren't that big and yeah, okay, I guess. I don't know. I still doubt the judgment of like ever doing anything permanent, regardless of what it is. If it's permanent, I'm like, are you really? But yeah,
you can get them removed later. Like, I mean, yeah, there's lasers.
It's never back to how it was, you know?
Let me tell you something. I had this one girl who was a friend of mine, okay, she got this enormous one. I mean, enormous one. Like, on the back, on her back, at the bottom of her back. Like, and I remember when she got it, like, was in the 90s. You know, that's why I'm saying that I saw this surge, because all of a sudden, this girl that I'd never seen do anything like this, all of a sudden, I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, you know, and it was like, enormous, but I guess I just I don't know. I got used to it, I guess. I'm like,
well,
no,
eventually,
like,
you do. And I mean, I'm like, you know, it's not like I'm, you know, seeing these people in the coffee shop and turning around and leaving because I can't stand being in the room with them or anything. I just question right. their judgment and like taste and all of that kind of stuff.
Well, but, yeah, you don't like it. I mean, you know, that's okay.
Hey. People can do what they want, but you know, and
right.
let me not even start with the people like doing the body modification stuff and the all that kind
penile
of
penile enlargement.
What?
Penile enlargements, you mean? Or
No, you know, I wasn't really thinking of that. I was thinking of more like the big things you stick in your ear and make a big circle. I've seen a lot more of those lately, too.
Okay.
Yeah, those right, kinds of things. And those get much more extreme, too. I'm really hoping that right now that's still a relatively extreme thing, but like I'm hoping that doesn't really like catch on. Like, you know, people adding horns to their head and all that. No, please, come on, really?
Oh, gosh. All right.
Okay, let's move on. I think it's time for a break. And when we come back, we're going to do real stuff. We've gone on for like 20 minutes on Rapture and tattoos, almost. So we're going to talk about the Republican field. And we're going to talk about that IMF guy who, you know, was off raping people or whatever. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the U.S. Israel stuff that's been going on in the last week. In any case, let's take a break, and we will be back after this exciting message. Okay, here we are. Republicans. There's been a lot going on. I mean, we've had several candidates essentially melt down over the last couple weeks. We've had several candidates announce they're not running. We've got a couple other people right. that are thinking about it that aren't in yet. Yeah, it's still just a very dynamic race. So let's start with the meltdowns, okay? We didn't talk about it a lot before, but like, Trump officially announced that he's out. You know, he's not going to run. You know, basically, we talked a little bit about him last week, but he hadn't made it official, I don't think. Where, you know, he just got out there, he started talking his birther stuff, and then like, you know, and then Obama said, okay, here's the birth certificate, and then he fell through the floor. Like, you know, he had been showing up in polls as like, you know, higher than all the other Republican candidates, and then like within a few days, he completely like collapsed to nothing. You know,
pretty much.
And then he's like, I'm out. After he made a comment at one point that says, and this was before he officially dropped out, or he was never officially in, so I guess he couldn't have dropped out. But, you know, he made a comment
he officially announced he wasn't going to do it.
Right. Yeah. Now, he made a comment saying, now I understand why Ross Perot got out in the middle of the race back in like 92 or whatever it was. You know,
great. So Ross is his idol. Okay. All right. Good. Okay.
Yeah, well, let's not even get into that. Ross was, anyway, that was very disappointing, I remember. Anyway, then we got Gingrich, who had probably the best initial rollout of a presidential campaign in history.
He might as well have freaking driven his campaign bus into a freaking ditch, you know, all on his own, on his way to his first press conference. You know, I mean, I've never seen anything like this. I mean,
let's describe what happened. He announced that he was running for president. He went on Meet the Press. He was asked a question about the Ryan budget that, you know, it was phasing out Medicare and all this other stuff that, you know, we've talked about before on this show. And his response basically called it right-wing social engineering.
Wing social engineering.
And said that it was probably a step too far and could never be accepted by the American people, blah, blah, blah. Now, by the way, everything he just said. You know, this is one of these cases where a politician accidentally told the truth.
Truth. Yes.
And so then immediately, the, you know, everybody else in the Republican Party goes nuts jumping on this guy. You know, I mean, everything he said was completely reasonable. Yes, this is a step too far. Like he didn't actually say he didn't like the plan. He basically said it's politically unrealistic, which I think is.
But let's talk about. I mean, the reason why, I'll tell you something. He was getting hammered, but for telling the truth. I actually agree with what he said.
Yeah, yeah,
totally.
I think what he said was completely reasonable.
The reality is. Why is it right-wing social engineering? Because all of a sudden, you're turning – you are – my gosh, you are forcing the average American to have to make one of the most complicated financial decisions regarding them securing their own health care and when they're old, when right now the government is doing it for them, okay? All right? And let's face it. As the mortgage fiasco over the last 10 years has shown, the average American is not – capable of making intelligent financial decisions, okay? and then you're gonna force them to do it.
Now, by the I should say,
yes, go ahead.
He didn't say he didn't like right-wing social engineering, you know, but I think you're absolutely
sure
right.
Sure as hell sounded like it.
You know, he was saying it was politically untenable. And he called it right-wing social engineering. And, you know, and I agree with you completely. He was actually doing a decent analysis of what was going on there with that project. Now, frankly, it may well be that something dramatic like getting rid of, you know, Medicare and Medicaid, you know, is necessary to eventually balance the budget, blah, blah, blah. Maybe not. Maybe – who knows? It's a debate. But in any case, everybody came down on him like a ton of bricks. For, you know, this accidental truth telling. And he, a couple days later, had to call up, like, Ryan to apologize. And then later he went on another interview.
Press release.
The press release. let me save that for a second.
I would say this. You should insert here when you edit the show. The reading of the press release.
I can't. For anyone who wants to do that, is like on the Stephen Colbert show. You can find it. Google it. Stephen Colbert. You know, Newt Gingrich reading. John Lithgow. You know, read this thing out loud. But anyway, let me finish. So his staff did release an incredibly amusing press release, which I'm going to try to look up in a second. But he said something along the lines, I wasn't actually talking about the Ryan budget, when, of course, it was a direct response to a Ryan question.
So what the hell was he talking about?
He put out a quote that says, anybody who quotes what I said on Sunday is lying. Or something like that. I forget the exact... because he already clarified and said what he said on Sunday was not correct. So basically he said it Sunday, then he walked it all back. So of course anybody who quotes what he said on Sunday is obviously lying because they're quoting something that he later said he didn't mean, even though he actually meant it at the time. So... Oh my God! After he made those comments, apparently, like a huge part of his campaign staff just was like, "Okay, we're out," you know. right. So, yes.
Let's see. The literati send out their minions to do their bidding. Washington cannot tolerate threats from outsiders who might disrupt their comfortable world. The firefight started when the cowardly sensed weakness. They fired timidly at first. Then the sheep, not wanting to be dropped from the establishment cocktail party invite list, unloaded their entire clip, firing without taking aim the distortions and falsehoods. Now they are left exposed by their bylines and handles. But surely they had killed them off. This is the way it has always worked. A lesser person could not have survived the first few minutes of the onslaught. Oh my god. But out of the billowing smoke and dust of tweets and trivia emerged Get Rich.
mean, this is like one of the best things ever. You know, and
I mean, my god.
We were complaining about the Republican race getting off to a slow start.
Oh, this is fantastic.
But now it's like it's getting so entertaining, and I just hope this lasts as long as humanly possible. I mean, I've seen a lot of Democratic liberal blogs, you know, posting things like, this is so awesome, making some popcorn, lean it back and watching.
I mean, this is fantastic, I gotta say. I mean, we haven't had this entertaining a freaking race in such a long time. And I mean, at first, exactly as you said, it was slow, it's whatever. Then Trump jumps in and jumps out. And then you got Gingrich coming in and doing all of this. Oh, man. Oh, well. So, anyway. So,
And then
give it...
Yeah. I mean, I really hope that it's like this straight up till the Republican convention. You know, I know in reality what's probably going to happen is their support is going to coalesce around some relatively normal Republican. But in the meantime, this is so wonderful to watch. This is so entertaining. You know, it revives my interest in being, you know, a political news junkie just to watch this stuff. Yes. It's so much fun.
I mean, I will say this, that over the last couple of weeks, I probably read more politics news I read in the last year and a half because of all of this stuff. It was just too hilarious.
It also almost makes me want to like record Saturday Night Live again to see their take on this stuff. But I figure if they do anything good, it'll be on YouTube.
Last night.
You know.
So anyway, let me ask. You know. So all right. So okay. So Gingrich is in. Trump said he's not.
Yep. Did I lose you, Yvonne? Okay, I think I lost Yvonne, so I'm going to hang.
Wow, so we have a bad tech day today for our...
Yeah, for our listeners, my internet just went kablooey. I thought I lost Yvonne, but it turned out I'd lost all internet. And so I actually had to go upstairs. I verified that other devices in the house weren't getting internet either. And then I rebooted the DSL modem, and then, you know, I'm back, but... You know, I have Quest DSL. It sucks. At least here. I don't know. Anyway.
Don't they have, like, something faster over there? I mean, I have, like...
We could put everything on Comcast. Our choices are basically Quest DSL or Comcast.
Comcast. This sucks. I had Comcast before. I have, like, right now, the U-verse from AT&T. I must say that I mean, the reliability of their connection is top notch, and the speed is really good. So I gotta give props for that. So.
Anyway, back to Republicans.
So where was I bumped off? I don't know.
You probably ranted for several minutes after I was gone, huh?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
you were talking about some of the field. So
I was saying that Mitch Daniels decided to not go in.
Yeah, Mitch Daniels decided he was out. We're still waiting to hear about Rick Perry.
Pollen stuff said about this, Michelle Bachman.
Yes, Michelle Bachman. Pollen said this week that she hasn't decided yet, but she feels the fire in her belly.
Oh, for the love of God. Maybe she could get some fire up her ass, too. But anyway, the Tea Partiers are not happy because everybody's trying to find some kind of a mainstream candidate to come into the thing. Like, I think that they were talking about, who was this, I think the New Jersey governor?
Christie.
Or, like, Jeb Bush. Yeah. Yep. Or, like, Jeb Bush.
There's been a lot of talk this week about Rick Perry, the governor of Texas, jumping in. And he's fairly conservative, by the way,
but he is one of the guys that keeps advocating for Texas to secede.
Well, he made one comment once, you know. What's a little secession between friends?
You've got
a lot of people going, I can't believe this is our set of candidates. Somebody else has to get in who's not in today. I did want to complete our meltdown list. It wasn't quite as big a meltdown as Trump and Gingrich, but I just wanted a misstep, I should say, for Santorum. Santorum had an interview.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about his. What the hell was it that he said?
He was in an interview talking about enhanced interrogation techniques and their use, and whether or not they helped get bin Laden and blah, blah, blah. And he was asked about, some comments because our good old friend John McCain has been actually in the last couple weeks has been really going after some of these folks on the right who are like, we got him because of enhanced interrogation techniques. We got him because of waterboarding, blah, blah, blah. And he's actually been investigating and calling the people who were involved and basically saying, no, they're full of shit. It wasn't because of this behavior.
Not at all.
And so Santorum was asked about this and said something like, with all due respect.
Oh, yeah, McCain doesn't know anything about interrogation. Or something, right?
Yeah, McCain doesn't know anything. I don't know the exact words, but it was basically like, McCain doesn't know anything about torture. And then everybody's like, he was a prisoner of war for several years and underwent a lot of these techniques himself. I think he might know something. But anyway, so I just wanted to complete our trifecta with Santorum, even though, I don't think Santorum's is quite as devastating as Trump and Gingrich, but, I mean, he showed himself to be a complete asshat, anyway, but...
Well, he just showed himself to what he is. I mean, let's face it. I mean, he was like, what did he say? Santorum, who, as far as I can tell, has never been in the fucking military or in anything of the sort. Oh, this is what he said. Said that McCain doesn't understand how enhanced interrogation works.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah, and you do, obviously, because, Santorum, you're such a fucking genius, obviously. I mean, especially with all your, all the time you spent, I guess, interrogating people. Who the fuck knows? But anyway.
So,
all right.
Other commentary I've seen, by the way, is that all of this kind of stuff that's going along actually improves the chances of some of the more mainstream Republican candidates that you're just not hearing very much about. You're not hearing all that much about Romney, although he did do his healthcare thing a couple weeks ago and, trying to get it out there. You're not hearing all that much about Pawlenty, and basically because the strategy for all these other guys who might actually be semi-reasonable Republicans.
So let these guys, destroy each other first?
Yeah, is just, shut up, stay in the background, let all these people implode, and then you'll be the one standing at the end.
I guess.
And it's I think it's a reasonable strategy for those kinds of folks. A lot of people were hoping for Mitch Daniels. They as one of these more mainstream guys who could get in. But his announcement was basically my family says no. So, which frankly, people make fun of it a little bit, but legitimate reason. I mean, there's nothing like. A presidential campaign even almost probably even more so than being president, it's got to put an immense strain on absolutely everything. You know, you're not going to see your family in 2 years, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, you're going to have an intense bubble of, you know, people paying attention to you at a level that has never been before. And, you know, even and then when you're president, all of this kind of stuff continues if you win. But during the campaign specifically, you're going to have everybody trying to pick apart every single little thing that happens. You know, you're and yeah, they for the most part do an okay job of sort of keeping away from, you know, young children and interfering with them. But, you know, even then, you know, we all knew about like Obama's kids, you know, during the campaign, and, you know,
sure,
they were trotted out at events, and, you know, so it affects everybody in a very devastating way.
We didn't know about Schwarzenegger's.
Oh, yes. That wasn't even on our topic list, but.
I know. I just remembered that I forgot that one too. Damn it.
You know,
well, he was a potential guy that everybody kept talking about being a Republican presidential candidate.
Well, but
and
if they repealed the 22nd Amendment, but or whatever.
Right. But people have been advocating for it or whatever. 22nd. Okay, and guess what? I mean, fuck. What the hell? I mean, seriously.
You know, and given, and this is probably a good transition into the IMF guy, but yeah, but what is up with these guys? I mean,
it's not just the Republican, because I mean, look, and we had, what's his name, John Edwards with that other fucking kid, okay, you know, so get him with a fucking kid. I mean, what the hell, Jesus. Did you guys ever hear of condoms? Or pulling out? Or something? Just let me start off with that little bit. Okay? Jesus.
Assuming they can't even start out with the don't do it part. But, you know, yes.
Okay, but if you are, I mean, geez, didn't you guys hear you can have sex without getting girls pregnant?
Oh, God. You know?
Well, you know, hey, you know, look, but this girl made out a lot better than Monica Lewinsky. I mean, you know, what the hell did Monica Lewinsky get to keep?
A
dress with smeared semen on it, you know, so that was it. I mean, you know, this woman got a house. I mean, you know, and I'm like, you know, I kept going and like saying that, you know, Jesus, you know, Bill's like banging this girl. I mean, she's not that pretty. I'm like, oh, my God, you know, she looks like a supermodel compared to what the hell like this woman looks like.
Oh, I haven't even seen any pictures.
Well, don't worry about it. You didn't miss much. The whole thing is just so, I mean, I'm just like, I have a housekeeper, I can't imagine banging my housekeeper. I mean, and mine is hot, okay? All right? And my wife, you know. And I can't imagine, like, going and, like, making a pass on my housekeeper, okay? All right? So, not for nothing.
I saw somebody give the quote that said, you hear about this kind of thing, you know, with professional athletes. You hear about this kind of thing with Hollywood stars. You hear about this thing with politicians. You know, with Arnold Schwarzenegger, politician, Hollywood, athlete, he never stood a chance.
Yes. Oh, man. You know, and, I mean, shit, you know, well, so anyway, so yeah, so that, you know, so had that happen this week too. So, and then of course we got the IMF head going and deciding that, you know, oh, look, the housekeeper looks cute. You know, why don't I just rape her right now before I head to the airport?
Well, and you know, the thing that's you know sort of been the most interesting about this is you know, some people have said, well, this is difference in cultural attitudes between the U.S. and France, blah, blah, blah. Okay, look.
No, 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 no.
I mean, look. It's one thing to be like, you know, oh, affairs are normal. We're not talking about an affair.
We're talking about rape. Okay?
It's a whole different thing. It's not just, you know, being looser with your sexual mores or whatever, or, you know, having the loyal wife sort of accept the fact that the husband is going to have affairs. We're not even talking about that kind of stuff. We're talking about him forcing himself on somebody. And then we see all of these people coming out of the woodwork, who, some of which know him and some of which don't, which are like what was it? Ben Stein said something along the lines of, there's no way he could have done this. He's an economist. You know, and a number of other people talking about how it was unfair to drag him through the mud like this because he was a big, important person. And
are you fucking kidding me?
And like, and they couldn't believe they were treating him just like any other criminal.
Well, how the hell else? Well, no. You know, let's just say that it's all false, okay?
Yeah.
All right? And that
which of course, you know, innocent until proven guilty, blah, blah, blah. Yep.
Right. Okay, let's just say it's all false, okay? This guy is not going to be bankrupt and broke for the rest of his life, okay? All right, let's start off with that. I mean, yes, his reputation has been besmirched, okay? And I'm just taking that side of the view. But honestly, when something like this happens and there's an accusation like that, unfortunately, you know, you got to take it seriously. I mean, the person needs to be, you know, you can't go.
Well, and apparently, you know, it wasn't, just to be clear, too. I mean, you have to take it seriously even when it's just an accusation. But there was supporting evidence that was enough to convince the authorities that they needed
to go and take action.
Yeah.
Right.
And for the grand jury to indict him later.
Yes. So, you know, I guess that's the problem. I mean, you know, you can't. You know, just because the person's important doesn't mean that you're not going to go and you know, prosecute them just like you would anybody else. So,
yeah, anyway. The sense of entitlement that's come out of all this stuff where, like, you know, I'm an important guy. Of course I can, like, rape whoever I want to. What do you mean I can't? Isn't that part of what comes with the job? Yeah. Oh, come on.
Right.
I mean, no one said it in exactly those words, of course, but that's been the implication in some of the
comments.
That's
what it feels like. I mean, that is what it feels like. I mean, you know, so, I mean, and look, there are false accusations.
Let me
tell you something. I got falsely accused of sexual harassment about 10, 11 years ago. Okay. You know, I actually had, luckily enough, had kept enough evidence, you know, to show that whatever this person was saying was not true. Okay. Happened to be one of my employees, and, you know, and I got cleared in the investigation. Of course, you know, the allegation didn't become public, so therefore it wasn't a big deal. But luckily also, the investigators had first grabbed the accusation and started just, you know, let me just look at the evidence. When they looked at the evidence, found that if anything, she had been sending me sexually suggestive messages or emails and not the reverse. So, I understand the thing about being falsely accused of something like this and how that would, you know, but I will tell you this, that if my employer had taken action against me and I wouldn't have done that, I mean, I guarantee you, I mean, I don't know, it may not have been such a bad thing. I'd probably have gotten a multi-million-dollar payday for having my life, like, destroyed, and I would be sitting on the beach right now earning 20% doing this. But, you know, hey, you know, so none of that happened, so there.
And one of the things you've seen, too, here with this guy in particular is after this came out, I saw one commentary, and I'm not going to remember where it was, that says, you know, watch out when you do something to somebody who has nothing to lose. Because, you know, he did this to the housekeeper, and of course she reported it. There was nothing to make her not do it. But after this has come out, apparently there are a lot of people that he's interacted with in the past who are coming out of the woodwork saying, you know, he forced himself on me too. He acted inappropriately with me. He did this thing, he did that thing. But all of these people are higher up people who worked in the IMF, worked with him in other places, who basically were in positions where, you know, if they had come out about this earlier, they might have affected their own careers negatively. Because apparently there was a culture, you know, in that organization, and there were a few other examples that were given in some of the articles I showed, where they tried to, you know, brush these things under, and, you know, generally people who complained didn't get sort of the bad guy taken care of. Instead, the people who got complained got taken care of, you know. And there was one mention of a case where somebody was making a complaint, and they basically said, well, that guy's going to retire in a couple years anyway, so there's no point in investigating, you know, things right. like that. And and so now all of these other people who were reluctant to come forward because they were afraid of the effects on their own career are now coming forward. I mean, so it doesn't sound like, and you know, there have also been stories, apparently Sarkozy, President Sarkozy of France, had warned this guy in the past, cut this shit out, especially when you're in the U.S. You know?
Ah, jeez. Well, some people feel like they can get away with everything, you know? I mean, I've certainly met my share of those. So, you know, this probably finally caught up to this guy. So,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll talk quickly about Israel too. I think we're going long, although it's hard to tell because, you know, you guys listening may not realize, but we've had a number of technical difficulties here. So, like, the actual time, you know, is like,
oh god,
you know, we've been sitting at our computers forever, but not all of that time was actually recorded. So anyway, we'll be right back after this break, and we will talk a little bit about U.S. Israel and all that stuff that's been going on.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
To Build a Nest of Brainwaves, by Steffi Drews. Beyond the dull hum of the mud city sprawl, wait for the meadow fox to vanish, den deep. Before new limbs find scissors, motion, or aerial outlooks, fall still, swollen plume. Tree ligaments tighten, knowing every night was named for this. Call it dew-spotted angel birth. Call it thirsty, perching wooden pedestal.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Okay, we're back. Yeah, let me start this out with my usual plaintive plea. Can't we just, like, buy a whole bunch of land in the Brazilian rainforest in two separate places a few hundred miles apart and relocate all of these people there on both sides of the fence and then just bomb the hell out of the actual existing area and level it and just, you know, get rid of this dispute that way?
Well, maybe the Brazilians would take you up on that deal.
You know,
I don't know.
I figure there's a lot of places on the planet that are still sparsely populated that are probably, like, better from a climate perspective and everything else than, you know, Israel-Palestine actually are. You know, just, I don't know. Like, it always seems so intractable. And both sides are basically, you know, non-sympathetic at this point. You know, it's like, you just don't want to deal with it, but you have to. And so, anyway, this week, Obama made a speech where he mentioned, there were a lot of other things that were in here. I mean, he talked about, you know, being against the Palestinians unilaterally declaring a state. He reiterated that the Palestinians had to recognize Israel's right to exist. He talked about Hamas having to get out or do certain things. He did a lot of, like, things that were really, you know, big, fat, slobbering gifts to the Israeli side of the Palestinian-Israeli argument. And then he spent one sentence saying that the terms of any agreement had to be based on, you know, the 1967 borders plus land swaps, which has basically been the policy of the United States has been this fundamental structure for like 20 years. You know, through the entire Bush administration, through the Clinton administration, probably even before then. Yep. And then explodes. Everybody goes crazy. He's saying the Israelis have to go back to their 1967 borders. He's betrayed Israel. Blah, 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 blah. And
but this has been the tenet of, like, one of the biggest tenets. It's a great land for peace. I mean, it's been one of the biggest negotiating points that we've been trying. It's one of the reasons we've been trying to get them to stop the construction of settlements in a whole bunch of these areas, et cetera, and so forth, and so on. You know, let's face it. I mean, the frickin' Palestinians deserve some land for themselves, for God's sakes, you know? I mean, when I was looking at this, just to make sure. I mean, the Six-Day War in 67, I mean, basically almost took away all their fucking land. Now, I understand the reasons why it happened at the time, because it was like, Israel was, been so many wars, they did a preemptive strike at the moment because they were pretty sure, and they were probably right, that they were going to be attacked themselves. So before that, they wanted to fucking just wipe them out, but you went and you took this land away, and they've got no place to call fucking home.
Well, and it's a matter of sort of administrating. I mean, they're obviously living there now. They're doing stuff, but they're not in control of their own destiny per se. We actually have made a lot of progress in the last few years. The Palestinian Authority has a lot more control over the West Bank and Gaza, or Hamas in Gaza and the Palestinian Authority in West Bank, than they did, like, back in Arafat days or whatever. I mean, the Israelis have pulled back a lot from where they were before, but we're no closer to an actually, like, resolved peace where, everybody in this region is, sort of happily living together and blah, blah, blah.
Not even remotely close.
I don't really understand exactly why Obama made this speech right now. He was trying to take advantage of the Arab Spring, blah, blah, blah. But maybe it's just the wording. But yeah, Netanyahu seems to have intentionally misinterpreted what Obama was saying in that phrase. Because again, he just reiterated essentially the policy of the last several administrations. He didn't really change much. Now, one thing apparently he did change is he was suggesting that this kind of thing could be the basis for an interim agreement, not just for the final agreement. But, it's still a fairly subtle change. Netanyahu and company decided to go apeshit over it.
Because they are – Netanyahu and company are not interested in making any fucking deal. They're not interested in any fucking deal whatsoever. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Their game is to just push the clock forward.
He gets a lot of fucking political mileage out of being trying to show himself as the – that he's getting bullied or whatever the hell, that he's the victim. And, that's it. That's all he's doing. I mean, he's just trying to, show himself also as a victim. And I think that he gets political mileage out of it. And that's it. That's all. He couldn't give a rat's ass about anything other than, I think, that the politics in Israel and whether it gets him elected.
Well, and speaking of which, I mean, what Obama said has been stuff that actually has been said by Israeli prime ministers in the past, who were a little bit more serious about actually looking for a solution here. But fundamentally, there are certainly portions of the Israeli people and some of the Israeli parties who are, think a lot more seriously about this. I shouldn't say think more seriously about it, but more constructively, let's say. But the direction that Netanyahu government is currently pushing things in is one where they're just trying to keep the status quo for as long as possible, and eventually that's just not tenable. I mean, more and more. I mean, it's not as if Israel has all that many supporters in the world right now. I mean, there are a few Western governments keep standing by them, but everybody else thinks they're assholes. The demographics are such that, they're going to be, even within Israel proper, they're going to be more and more non-Jewish people in Israel proper. And, you know, the goal of being a Jewish state and the goal of being a democracy will at some point be in conflict with each other. And how they deal with, you know, the Palestinians right across the way is going to have a big effect on those dynamics as well. And you just can't – effectively what they're saying is as long as they're continuing to exert control over these areas that they took control of in 1967, you know, they are being a colonial occupier, and, you know, they're enforcing a sort of apartheid. And it's not a sustainable model for the long term. I mean, I don't know. They may be able to get away with it for another 20, 30 years. Who knows? But, you know, eventually it's going to break down. Eventually you have to, like, have these people – either you're going to have to have a massive war where one side or the other wins and the other side is obliterated, mm-hmm. or
right.
they have to start getting along. I mean – one of those two things is eventually going to happen.
And I'm saying this from both sides. It's not just the Israelis. I mean, I know the Israelis have taken a hardline stance, like, you know, over the last few years and not negotiating. This has been Netanyahu's, like, thing right now. But it's not like, I mean, I understand, you know, also from the other perspective, I mean, let's face it, the Palestinians, I mean, or their leaders have not been also, like, really trying to negotiate anything also.
Well, and there's very interesting dynamics there, too. Like, what's his name? Abbas, the president of the palace. He's seemed like on a few occasions, like he actually wants to, but he's politically got his hands tied as well by his own, if he goes too far, he'll be out of office in a second. And then you've got Hamas who, you know, won elections in the West Bank, even though, and they're not even slightly interested. You know,
in a negotiated settlement. So yeah.
So again, this is where I'm like, you know, make new Israel somewhere in Brazil, make new Palestine, you know, somewhere else. Maybe give them somewhere in some other continent entirely. I don't know. But you know, get them as far away from each other as you can. Give them some fresh land that is.
Maybe we could do it all. You know, maybe we could settle this in high stakes poker game, winner take all.
There you go.
Okay. You know, the winner gets to keep the land there, the loser has to move.
And I know I'm being, you know, silly about that because both sides.
I'm not being that silly. I think it may be a better, easier way to solve this than anything else. Let's just fucking get them down. Okay, let's go. You know,
but both sides feel historical, strong connections to that specific piece of land. And, so like giving him something somewhere else, like, you know, forever.
Why the fuck are these people so tied down to a fucking piece of land, for God's sakes, you know? I mean, really? I mean, I don't fucking live where I got born, and I couldn't give a flying rat's ass about going back there anyway. Give me another fucking piece of land. Who the hell gives a shit?
You know, and there are plenty of other pieces of land in the world that are, you know, more pleasant than that particular plot of land.
Yes! You know? It's not exactly like, you know, like really primo real estate.
But you know, it's historical. It's where they blah. It's, you know, it's the Dome of the Rock. It's all of the you know, historical things in Jerusalem and the area around it. And you know, I understand, but sort of, not really. But I don't know. We only talk about this issue on Curmudgeon's Corner like once a year or something because it always ends up.
Yeah, because it's pointless.
It always ends up in a pox on both your houses. You know, you guys just need to grow up and like deal with each other and make a deal. And like, I know, you know, these things like, you know, when they've been killing people back and forth and blah, 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 and centuries of distrust. Well, this particular issue only goes back like a till World War II or so, but I understand why it's difficult, but at the same time, you want to shake all these people and say, you know, I understand all the history that happened in the past. I understand how awful it is. I understand, you know, the bad things that have happened to both sides. I understand all the reasons why you don't trust each other, but you have to suck it up and make a freaking deal and, like, learn how to live together, you know?
And that's about all we can say about it.
Yeah.
Really? Yep. Okay.
And again,
with that.
And if a meteor had to hit somewhere on Earth, this would be a decent place to pick.
Oh, no. How could you say that? That's
me. I know. I don't mean
it. Come on.
I don't mean it. Much better to land in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean so it deluges and destroys all the coastal cities in both and all the continents surrounding the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh, great. And on that happy note, okay, it's time to end our show.
No, okay. I am not wishing an asteroid on anybody. I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm just being, you know, silly and...
You're just frustrated, yes.
I'm just frustrated. Right. On the other hand, you know, if there had been a rapture, maybe it would have been nice if those folks could have gone.
Yeah, that would have been fine.
Anyway.
Of course, they didn't believe in this shit in that anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Yes, the real answer is not somehow destroying the Middle East. The real answer is these people have to learn to get along! Anyway.
That would be nice.
Okay. That's a show. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
It's a show.
As usual, email me, abulsme@abulsme.com. That's A-B-U-L-S-M-E. With any questions, comments, thoughts, anything along those lines. And tell your friends to listen. We're glad you listen and enjoy the show. And we'll be back next week. Tune in then. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Later, Ivan.
Bye-bye.